Well, thanks very much, Bob. And thank you for the invitation to be here to be your anniversary speaker. 185 years. That's older than I am. My goodness. It's been nearly 30 years since I stood here as part of St. Paul's staff, and a few things have changed since then. Gil McKenzie, my mentor at the time, has moved on to the next chapter, and so has my father, who followed in Gil's footsteps and, in a sense, in my footsteps, as I at one time followed in his. Whoops. There we go. As I think back upon my 6 years here at St. Paul's, I'm incredibly grateful for the education that they gave me into the complexities of the human condition. Believe me, I've been mining that education for everything it's worth in my teaching and writing ever since. I'm also reminded, and I trust that Richard and Michelle can appreciate this, that while ministry is certainly rewarding work, it's also hard work. On call 8 days a week, trying to be all things to all people, administrator, motivator, mediator, youth worker, social worker, biblical scholar, counselor, consciousness raiser, pastor, priest, and general fire putter outer. To say nothing of the pressure to be relevant and riveting in the pulpit Sunday after Sunday in under 20 minutes. And add to this your responsibilities to presbytery and conference and general counsel and your constant awareness of the constant need to the wider, of the constant need in the wider world, and you have basically an impossible workload, nothing remotely 9 to 5 about it. And yet, admit it, you have to try and remain true to yourself, if you know what that means anymore. Sometimes that can get a little fuzzy. And emotionally available to your family and your partner, if you have one. And also to remain faithful to the calling you felt initially to serve God's people. Well, as for me, I felt called to other things, or rather to serve in other ways. Called from St. Paul's to St. Thomas, as it turned out, St. Thomas University, and from theology to gerontology, two fields that, the more I think about it, really need each other. And I'll return to this a little later. Now, there's much that I would like to talk to you about, but conscious of my time, I want to focus on what I know best. And what I think I know best is aging, not just because I'm teaching it, but because I'm living it, as are we all. Whether we're 2, 12, 20, or 200, we're all aging, we're all changing every day. It's the one thing that we all have in common. And because I'm living aging, I'm learning about it as I go. And there's lots to learn, isn't there? Because aging is a complex enterprise on just about every front, physically, intellectually, emotionally, interpersonally. So you'll hardly be getting the final word from me about aging here this morning, or about changing. I prefer to use the two words synonymously. Aging is really just changing, and we're all changing. What I'd like to offer you, though, is a vision of aging that actually runs through many of our great spiritual traditions, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, and that is aging as a natural monastery. I don't necessarily mean monastery in the physical sense, although this monastery here I've actually physically been to, not as a monk, but as a tourist. It's Montserrat outside of Barcelona in Spain, a beautiful, beautiful, inspiring place. I'm speaking about aging as a natural monastery in the metaphorical sense, aging as an inherently spiritual experience, not necessarily religious, but spiritual. So straight away, a couple of things. First, all churches nowadays are keen to attract more young people to services and so forth, and that is absolutely great. I get it totally. But the fact is that the profile of the average congregation is not wildly different from the profile of our society as a whole, where we are an aging population, especially in New Brunswick, where I learned just the other day that people over 65 now outnumber people under 19. Second, aging is not for the faint of heart. It can be, let's be honest, a grinding, grueling journey in which we can get mired in mundane matters like keeping medical appointments, managing our pills, and just getting from A to B. Because of these challenges, sadly, though, aging in general gets a bad rap and is seen by society and sometimes even by ourselves as a sort of disease almost, as a downward slide toward disability, decrepitude, and death. But this This narrative of decline, if you want to call it that, is at worst fake news. You've heard that phrase before. And at best, just not the whole story of aging. For aging is at heart, I believe, a spiritual and not merely a physical process. And thus, it's potentially positive and not negative in nature. It's not just the unfortunate byproduct of living, the cruel price we have to pay for getting to live at all. It may well be, on some level, the whole point of aging, of living, rather. Now, in case you think this is wishful thinking on my part, you can see from all of these books up here that the topic of spiritual aging is actually of growing interest nowadays. Yet, ironically, not so much in my own discipline of gerontology, which I fear is still in the grip of the narrative of decline and implicitly sees aging as a kind of a problem, medical, physical, financial problem to be solved. Or when you think about all the creams, anti-aging creams and lotions that you can buy nowadays as an enemy to be defeated, not, as I'm inviting you to think of it today, as an adventure to be entered into heart and soul. A couple of years ago, I was having a significant birthday, and on that very day, I happened to see the headlines of our local newspaper, and there it was in black and white, federal and provincial government teaming up to combat an aging population. So how on earth is aging a positive experience and a spiritual adventure? Well, every stage of life has what psychologists call its unique developmental tasks. When you're 1 or 2 years of age, your main developmental task is to start walking and talking. When you're in your teens and 20s, they are to leave home and start a life of your own. Well, later life is no different, really. It, too, has its own developmental tasks, only they're more philosophical or emotional or internal or, as I'm saying, spiritual in nature. Growing old, says Thomas More, author of the best-selling book, Care of the Soul, says that growing old is one of the ways that the soul nudges itself into attention to the spiritual aspect of life. It's almost as if the universe has set things up so that if we've ignored our spiritual development in early life, aging itself pushes us to do so in later life. Now, we can resist that push, and we can go kicking and screaming into that dark night, as many opt to do, whether out of machoism, masochism, or just plain fear. But aging itself naturally, I think, pushes us in ways that open us to seeing it as not really such an awful fate after all. And this openness my dear dad displayed in a little essay that he wanted to write a few years before he died so that he could encourage other people, younger and older, who might be fighting the idea of aging. And he was very particular about the title. The title he wanted was Accepting the Exigencies of Aging. And in it, he quoted the poet Robert Browning, "Grow old along with me, the best is yet to be, the last of life for which the first was made." So for various reasons, including changes in our bodies and brains themselves, I'm going to tell you that aging nudges us, first of all, to become more down to earth, both literally and figuratively. Literally, in that our height actually shrinks by 2 or even 4 inches over time because of conditions with strange names like osteopenia, sarcopenia, and kyphosis. But also, aging makes us more down to earth figuratively, as the losses of later life, and they can be many, can bring us to our knees, and in the process can make us grateful for the little things in life. The smell of a flower, the enjoyment of a joke, the kindness of a friend, and can remind us of our frailty and our mortality, can remind us that at base we are fragile arrangements of atoms that started out billions of years ago in the hearts of stars, that we are, after all, as the song says, dust in the wind. Here I have to stop and tell you that my mother, who's here with us today, Emma Randall, has fallen in love again. Now, don't tell anybody, and please don't tell Dad, all right? She has fallen in love with Kris Kristofferson, the songwriter. And do you know why? If you go to visit her, she will show you, she'll play for you why she loves the song, "Why Me, Lord? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the pleasures I've known?" I'll spare you the pleasure of me singing the rest of the song. Now, I'm not sure how the relationship's going to work out because it's a long distance kind of thing. He's in Nashville much of the time. Anyway, they'll sort that out. Go and visit her. She'll play you that song on the organ in her apartment. So aging is also nudges us to become more farsighted. Again, literally and figuratively. Literally insofar as changes in our eyes make it easier for us to see things far away than close up, which is why when you got the bulletin today and started looking at it, many of you went like this, all right, to read the fine print. A condition called presbyopia is to blame for that. But also figuratively, aging nudges us and makes it easier for us to take a step back and see the bigger picture, to take the long view of things, as Dad loved doing on his walks with the dogs up on Cherry Mountain across from the manse where I grew up in Harvey Station. Aging nudges us to be more patient, more open to the gray areas of life, not needing things to be so black and white, so right or wrong, more tolerant of ambiguity and ambivalence in ourselves, in others, in life, more able to see the yin and the yang of things, and more responsive overall to metaphor and symbol, a capacity that psychologists of aging call post-formal thinking. Aging nudges us also to become more complex emotionally, but specifically to have better control of our emotions than we did in the stormy days of our youth, with a tilt toward positive emotions in particular. It enables us, aging does, to lighten up. Gerontologists call this the positivity bias, which is due in part, apparently, to better cooperation between the left and the right hemispheres of our aging brains. Aging nudges us to delete activities and things and possessions and even relationships from our lives that weigh us down or bring us down or that no longer really matter anymore, and to focus on those that do. It's a kind of natural decluttering that gerontologists refer to as social emotional selectivity. Now, I hope you appreciate here that I'm giving you a crash course in gerontology jargon, all right? And there's no charge for that. No tuition will be owed to St. Thomas. Well, you can give to St. Thomas, but that's another whole talk. Aging nudges us to turn inward and to become more reflective overall, something called disengagement. It enables us to crawl up inside of ourselves, as former St. Paul's choir member Maxine Hewson once told me. It enables us to crawl up inside of ourselves, to get to know ourselves better, to pull ourselves together, and to identify our unique legacy, not just the possessions and the money that we hope to pass on to our children, but the peculiar collection of learnings and wonderings that we've gathered along life's way, our unique wisdom. Wisdom has been a theme in the readings already today. Aging nudges us to explore our own unique story, for it's in our story, ultimately, that our wisdom lies, which, if we can get that story out or down, could benefit somebody else, our children and our grandchildren, for starters. The gerontological term for this impulse to pass something of ourselves to those who come after us is called generativity, but a better word, to borrow from our First Nations friends, aging nudges us to grow into the role of elder. Aging nudges us, and I'm getting to the end of my long list here, aging nudges us to experience how fuzzy the line can really be between ourselves and the other people in our world whom we care about and love. My mother, to cite her as an example again, cares so much for her children and her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren and about what's going on in the lives of the people and the friends she has in the building where she lives. It's almost like she herself doesn't matter. Aging nudges us to appreciate just how fuzzy the line is between life death and life beyond death. And it nudges us, certainly, to grapple with the perennial questions, as they're called, that sooner or later face us all. Where have we come from? Why are we here? And where are we going? It nudges us towards the transcendent dimension of existence as a whole. Aging nudges us to prepare for our future by making peace with our past, to let go of grudges and regrets that have hemmed us in and held us down. I know in the world of AA, this is a really important thing, to let go of grudges and regrets that have held us down, and by making amends wherever possible with those whom we have hurt or who have hurt us, by mending fences with neighbors, siblings, children, whomever, while we still have the time. Aging nudges us to see our lives in a larger cosmic context, as a humble and yet significant link in a larger unfolding, in the great chain of being, and to deepen our honoring of the mystery that lies around us and inside us. And lastly on this list, aging nudges us to go deeper into, or perhaps outside of, the religious tradition into which we've been born, and to upgrade our concept of God toward a more expansive, more mature concept in light of the widening world that we moved into and all the things that we've experienced since childhood, given that likely we've put away childish things in most other areas of our lives. One of the most powerful little books I read in my theology days was by the New Testament writer J.B. Phillips, entitled Your God is Too Small. Now, as I say, it's possible for us to resist the nudges of aging, to storm our way into later life bitter and sour. Many do. Or we can go with the flow, respond to the nudges, accept the exigencies of aging, and actively try to grow old and not just get old, because important work awaits us in later life. Philosophic homework, one rabbi calls it, and to tackle that homework, to tackle the developmental tasks of later life, which are spiritual tasks, we need one another. This is where the church comes in. In principle, we believe, or at least I believe, and this tells you about my own evolving concept of the mystery of God, that God, whose steadfast love endures forever, as the psalmist says, or who is closer to us than breathing and nearer than hands and feet, as the poet says, God who is forever at the leading edge of our awareness, not so much above us, but just ahead of us, he leadeth me. God is forever inviting us to move deeper into life through the challenges of aging, to move to life on a deeper level, the fullness of life, and is inviting us to be more fully and authentically ourselves. The church, ideally, in my view, is a sacred space where we can respond to this invocation together in what my colleague Gary Kenyon and I call wisdom environments. Wisdom environments. AA is a wisdom environment, where we can support one another on the journey of aging, on the journey of changing, and can celebrate together the incredible wealth of life experience, the sheer number of years that's represented within these walls every week. Experience which, if we could harness it properly, could turn this whole town upside down, and maybe even the country. Now, churches all have their own stories, of course, but sadly, for some, churches are experienced not so much as wisdom environments, vibrating with empathy and compassion, but as toxic environments, not as welcoming spaces in which we feel accepted to and supported to grow and become, but as a hornet's nest of pettiness and bickering. Where that's the case, and I know it's not the case here, but sometimes it can be, and I think it could partly be because we've unwittingly internalized this narrative of decline and so secretly see aging in many ways as in negative terms. It could be because we're not accepting aging, not growing into it, but trying to escape it, deny it, and fight it, in which case we're operating out of fear and not faith. And we know for a fact that fear breeds all manner of negativity. If there's any truth to this, then, as I said earlier on, we need to have more dialogue between theology and gerontology. So let me, as a gerontologist, conclude with three very quick recommendations for how to make St. Paul's even more, not so much senior friendly, which is a term I find kind of, I don't know, patronizing, but rather more age embracing. And there are even better terms than that, probably. First of all, my first recommendation, hire a gerontologist. Preferably one trained at STU, I'm not biased, because we teach courses on spirituality and aging, for one thing. Hire a gerontologist, or somebody with a gerontological training, sensitivity, to help inject the age variable into every conversation, every program, every meeting you have, and every decision that you commit to. Second, encourage or organize discussion circles which could definitely intersect and which should certainly be intergenerational, for young people and older people need each other in order to grow. And in those circles, you could use novels, autobiographies, movies, or books like the ones I showed earlier to investigate together the subtle intricacies of the aging and changing process in relation to your own lives, and therefore learn from and about one another in the process. That's a wisdom environment. Thirdly, and this is my passion as a narrative gerontologist, encourage the flourishing or the establishment of life writing groups or guided autobiography groups, such as are springing up all over the place these days, where people can delve together into their stories and therefore into their wisdom in greater depth, which is a process that I believe is implicitly spiritual in nature. Now, I could go on and on, but I'll end here, not because I've said all that I could, far from it. I haven't talked about a ton of topics that you'd expect a gerontologist to go into. Among those topics are how regular involvement in religious services and observances is actually good for your physical and mental health and helps you live longer. I can't get into it, so how about I tweet about these topics to you later? Follow me on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter. I don't even know what it is. But somebody down south of the border seems to know. Anyway, I'm going to end because I've run out of time and you've probably run out of patience. But I hope I made a few points that you can take home with you and think about or discuss with others that will enrich your experience of aging or at least make aging in general seem much more intriguing. It'd be great if we had 20 minutes for Q&A, but we don't. Sure. So let me simply say, thank you, and congratulations.